Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Jerry Rosella Bocella. Jerry Rosella Bocella is an arts advocate, educator, and designer. She graduated from Mount Mercy College, what is now Carlo University, in 1958. In 1994, she received the Carlo Alumni Service Award in the Arts, followed in 1996 by a Carlo Woman of Spirit Award for her work with bringing the arts to inner-city children. She is a member of the Mad Women in the Attic Writing Workshop. Hi, Jerry. How are you?
Fine, thanks, Jan.
Happy to have you here, and you have a whole bunch of poems you're going to read from today.
This one is a poem about my grandfather, who I never knew. I began writing poems about my parents' lives in America, but then I realized I should go back a little further, and this is one of those poems. Tedemoto Requiem. The arched stone entrance leads to you, lying in state on white embroidered sheets, dressed in your special occasion suit, your grieving family keeping watch until morning. The centuries-old granite foundation of your home rumbles. Grandchildren run for cover, shepherded by stunned adults. On the hill called La Costa, overlooking your town, the clock in the tower stops when the earthquake strikes. 4 o'clock a.m. The vigil ends. A messenger arrives from the church, the same church where you married my grandmother, Gerarda, so many years ago. There will be no cortege with you in the carriage, followed by family and friends, walking and wailing. No town band playing a just-out-of-tune dirge on dinged brass. No priest with flowery phrases promising entrance to Paradiso in the arms of angels. Your friends carry you on their shoulders through the rubble of crumbled roof tile. There is no rhythmic tolling from the damaged steeple, only the sound of damp dirt hitting wood. I included the following war stories as a tribute to the soldiers in this unjust war. War Stories, 1917. You were 18, orange blossoms tucked in your honey-colored hair. You walked from La Chiesa di Santo Spirito through town, white tulle skimming the cobblestones, dodging confetti and coins raining from balconies, the tilt of your blushed cheeks acknowledging the tributes. Your groom, dark eyes smiling, finally holding your hand in public, waves to well-wishers, his cufflinks catching the morning sun. As you wind around the narrow street, a notice comes into view, silencing the procession. A manifesto, plastered on layers of others, lists names of men who must report for duty. Among them, Michele Rosiello. Your viaggio di nozze is canceled. It isn't proper for a young bride to ride on a train with strangers, your father says. Your husband of 12 days leaves you for 4 years to fight a war nobody understands. A gift from your mother, a blue silk dress with a fur collar, is worn for the photograph, not for the honeymoon. A soldier's message. My mother was 89 when she revealed to me the seed of an idea that would lead to a voyage to America. Your father wrote to me from Albania and mentioned that he had something up his sleeve, something we should discuss on his next leave in the spring of 1920. She handed me a small bundle wrapped in faded linen, carefully tied with a thin strip of silk, light blue with flowers, a remnant of a dress she had sewn so long ago. Among the letters still in their envelopes was the one that hinted at the grand plan. I unfolded the fragile sheet, struggled to decipher the Italian script, written in my father's hand. Cara Maria, ti voglio bene. These following poems reflect the struggles my parents encountered as new Americans. Grocery shopping in America. Far away from the open market in the piazza of her hometown, my mother asks for a total cost of her purchases at the checkout counter in the AMP. $3.43, replies the young cashier, slowly rounding each syllable. Momentarily longing for her other home, my mother snaps open her little fabric change purse, looks up and says, "I'm not deaf, I just speak broken English." Made by hand. You worked for 2 months on the set of pillowcases for your new friend in America, pulling and reworking threads, embroidering delicate lily of the valley white on white, finally crocheting scallops on the hem-stitched edges. You gave her the gift carefully wrapped in white tissue paper, tied with a satin ribbon. She opened it and said, "You're lucky, Mary. You don't have to spend money on presents." Years later, you told me the story, then added, "I never, ever again gave gifts of my handiwork to friends."
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Jerry Rosella Bocella. I want to ask you, Jerry, about these family poems. You have quite a few of them, and I love the sense of history and story that's in them. Can you talk about sort of how you write them, how you start writing a poem about was it a grandfather that you had never met? I guess you're relying on the stories of others, or?
Yeah, my parents both were storytellers, and they just offhandedly told me stories about their growing up and their life here. And at the time, that was just part of my life. I never, you know, thought anything about it. But I'm kind of an archivist at heart, and I love to preserve things, too many things probably. But anyway, I wanted to record their history for my children and my grandchildren. And I think I wanted to do it through poetry because, you know, jazz has that nature about it that's not just so set. It's I can't think of the word for jazz, a progressive, for what you do in jazz. It's a progressive, it's a transformational kind of thing. It moves as it goes. And I think that's how I wanted to do these stories, not stilted, just more or less like
you
music.
You mean improvisation?
Thank you, Jan.
Took me a while
It's the older genes in me right now. Cells, maybe. But anyway, the improvisational nature of jazz. And that's what I think you can do with poetry. And so that's why I chose to do it in poetry rather than prose.
Mm-hmm.
And also the ability to paint with words. I think poetry manages that a little bit. And so that's why I wanted to do it with poetry. The way I do it is just to recall a story that I was told, and I remember them all. And I just write the story down first, and then after about 15 or 20 sheets of agony, I try to come up with the poem.
Mm-hmm. So you don't have them all written down yet. You have them in your mind, and you only write them when it comes down to making a poem.
I'm probably a little too perfectionistic about it because I want to get all of the stories down before I put them in a manuscript or in a book of some type. And I may just have too many stories.
No,
I don't know.
You never have too many stories. Never, Never. I was struck by the poems about the discrimination that your mother had run into. And is that a story that you grew up with?
I didn't know. I didn't experience the discrimination, and they never talked about it when we were growing up. It was later, in later years, after we were grown, that these stories started to come out, mm-hmm. their struggles with discrimination. Mm-hmm. And my dad had those stories, on the job. The young, more inexperienced people would tease him about his language. Mm-hmm. And he knew far more about literature and about the world than these young people. And it was very difficult for him.
Yeah.
Okay. And my mother also with the hurt. They were hurt with these kinds of actions. But we didn't even realize that as growing up. We just mm-hmm. didn't, because I never felt that I was discriminated against.
Okay. Could you read some more, please?
My parents' stories during the Depression years are the following poems that I have. And I like to say determination equals survival. And these, I hopefully will point that out. Before refrigeration, July 1939. My brother and I stand beside the big red truck. We watch and wait anxiously while my father carefully rolls up his shirt sleeves. He removes the pick from its worn leather sheath. With quick stabs, chips off slivers from a smooth block of ice, hands one to each of us, covers the ice with layers and layers of canvas, places tongs on the hook, lifts the steel back panel, fits the clanking bolts into place, drives off to his appointed rounds, a trail of water following. Coal for sale. A coal for sale sign calls customers to our backyard. With wheelbarrows, wagons, push carts, they arrive for service. With shovel in hand, my mother smiles politely, assessing with blue-eyed precision. She plants one foot on the shovel's edge and leans the full weight of her small frame against steel and lifts, again and again, until the bushel is filled and the 25 cents is paid. She stoops to hoist the load. Out of the pocket of her starched white apron rolls a ball of ecru thread and a partially finished rosette dangling from a crochet hook. My dad had such pride in his work, and he would often talk about his job experiences to us, about the kindness of his clients on hot or on cold days. And sometimes he would take us on the job. Those Sundays on the job for my father. Gas heat and refrigeration forced you to put aside ice picks, tongs, coal chutes, and shovels. A ledger with names of customers who through the years became your friends. Your next job took you to post-war housing plans in the suburbs. You carried trowels, levels, floaters, and edgers in a black leather case you jokingly called your doctor's bag. Sometimes on a Sunday after Mass, you would take us for a ride to the construction site to show us your work, all marked with the company stamp. A smooth driveway with just the right curve, a pair of steps still in wooden form. Once it was a foyer laid out in the shape of a star. You showed us how each piece of flagstone was cut and fit into place like a large mosaic. You said a doctor lived there. Years later, you imprinted your grandchildren's hands in cement-filled pie tins, then poured our sidewalk. When you were satisfied with the smoothness of the surface, I watched you with a little flourish mark it with your name. We took our children to Italy for a roots tour, And their grandparents showed them all about their lives, where they went to school, their church they were married in. Homeland memories. With their grandfather in the lead, my children wind their way through the worn cobblestone streets of his hometown. They stop suddenly, and my father proudly points to a pathway overlooking the piazza and says, "When I was young like you, I used to wait up there and hope I would see your grandmother walk by." We leave the square just as the terracotta roofs are one with the sunset.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Jerry Rosella Bocella. I know that, Jerry, earlier in your life, well, not that long ago, I guess, but you did a lot of work with inner-city youth. You've gotten some awards, Carlo Woman of Spirit, and then you also had another award, which was the Carlo Alumni Service Award. And I'm just noticing all through your poems, there's a sense of honoring those who have come before. There's a great sense of humanity in your work. And I know that you've talked before about the healing power of the arts, and that seems to be something that drives you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, going back to my parents, they really were very nurturing to us about the arts. We took music lessons, art lessons, and education was a very important thing for them. And I carried that with me to the point of needing to take this message not only to our children, but to others who may not have had the opportunities to have had their creativity nurtured or to have seen and experienced some of the things about art, about music, about words, about all of the arts. And I, in my experience, have found that the arts truly are healing to body and soul. And
are you talking actually healing, or are you talking
spiritually healing, which really addresses the physical healing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What kind of work did you do? Was it neighborhood work or?
It was through the schools and through the East Liberty Arts Council, which I was a co-founder.
Oh, okay.
Of that organization, and we did it through that organization, and we were able to touch people in the schools through that instrument, through that.
Oh, that's great. I wonder if you've shared some of your poems with your children, or because so much of it is rooted in family. If these stories are now getting to the rest of your family through your poetry, is that happening yet?
Yes, I call them and I tell them, and some of them are with me when I have just the seed of a poem going, and they encourage me to keep moving along with it, and it's just wonderful because all three of our children are artists, and they are wordsmiths, filmmakers, and music makers, and that also it goes back to my parents nurturing it in me, my nurturing it in them, and I'm just loving watching them nurturing it in their children.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Yeah. Okay. How about more poems?
I have this one I would like to dedicate to my mother, who was the chief storyteller in our home. Under the Black Fig Tree. Years ago, you told me about going to the vineyard with your mother to take lunch to the workers. Sandwiches made with onions and walnuts on crusty bread from the brick oven. You played hide and seek with her, running among twisted olive trees and rows of staked grapevines, their fruit waiting to be harvested. When she called, "Dove sei?" you sang back, "Sotto il fico nero." Through the years, you met my "where are yous" with the same answer, our little inside joke. Now your great-granddaughter runs and plays among the flowers and fig-laden tree in my garden. When I hear her calling, "Where are you, Grandmum?" I think of you hiding under the black fig tree. This is about a little picnic that my granddaughter, Tess, who was 3 at the time, took to the park. Picnic with Tess. We packed our basket with animal crackers, figs, and a sippy cup with juice. Headed to the park to find the perfect spot under a tree near the swings. You told me exactly where. We took the 4 corners of the cloth, threw it up, watched it billow, and land on the grass, unpacked our lunch, and munched on lions, tigers, and elephants. We heard squawking geese heading south in V formation, felt the wind gust that showered us with gold. "Look, Tess, it's raining pretty leaves. Isn't nature wonderful?" You leaned into me and said, "I love you, Grandmum." And not to leave Adia out, who is my other grandchild, I'm in the process of writing about her Mona Lisa smile, and I don't have that finished yet.
Okay. I'm wondering if you have any advice or, I don't know, ideas for women who are maybe returning to writing or have been away from writing for a while and are thinking, you know, "I can't do this," or, you know, "How do I start?" Anything like that?
Well, you know, when I go back to my earlier poems, I realize how amateurish they are, how unrefined. And so my biggest suggestion would be get in a workshop. Get somewhere where you can get guidance and where you can get support from other women who also think they can't write. Mm-hmm. Because we really need that support and that guidance. It's writing is a craft that you really have to learn about. Mm-hmm. Even though you have the instinct and you have the soul and the you want to do it, you really need guidance. Mm-hmm. That would be my suggestion.
Okay. Good idea. We have time for a couple more.
This is a poem that goes back to my grandfather when he was still alive. Of course, another story that my mother told me about him when she was young. She was maybe, 10 years old or so, whatever. Close Call, 1910. My mother recalls the surprise snowfall that awakens you at 3 in the morning. You grab the long wooden pole with a hook at the end. Under the weight of your dark woolen cape, you walk the quiet mile to the Oliveto, hoping to get there in time. You see row after row of trees, branches bending to the ground. The wind takes them down with a crack. Gently you shake the overloaded limbs until most of them spring up again, revealing their shiny leaves with silver undersides. You, the grandfather I'll never know, save another harvest for pressing. This is another poem from the Depression times. Coal at any price. Like king of the mountain, my dad stands on the back of his 5-ton truck, shovel scraping steel. He lifts and hurls black lumps that rumble down the chute into a cavernous bin. The lady of the house appears, cradling a beautiful doll, missing one shoe. Placing it in his sooty hands, she says, "Take this to your little girl. I don't have money today." Depression image. He caught a glimpse of me and knocked to ask if he could photograph the Shirley Temple look-alike peeking from the window. My mother turned him down. No money for this luxury. He tried again and settled for tomatoes from her garden. A daughter speaks of war. The sepia photograph reveals two soldiers sharing a cigarette. One gives the other a hand-carved letter opener to send to his new bride, the one she uses to open my father's letters. Quietly sitting for a while, listening for occasional cannon blasts, the Italian and Serb firmly shake goodbye, return to their regiments to resume fighting, one against the other. Rosary Room. Hazelnuts in fuzzy pods piled up to the ceiling wait to be sold in open-air markets in the town square. They leave behind swags of brown dots on whitewashed walls, like the beads my grandmother fingers in prayer.
It's the poetry of Jerry Rosello Bocella. Thank you so much, Jerry.
You're welcome. It was nice to be here, Jan.
It's wonderful. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published each Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Alan Wadey. Sound engineers are Amy Sutton, Ziggy Edwards, and Michelle Stoner. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP. We'll